The retirement and IRA show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Salnier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor.
This is the Retirement and IRA Show coming to you from beautiful Northern Colorado. Join us as certified financial planner Jim Salnier, as well as Colorado State University finance instructor and certified financial planner Chris Stein, teach you about IRAs, 401ks, annuities, Social Security, pension plans, and estate planning in a fun and enjoyable show. Whether you are listening live in Colorado or streaming from their website or iTunes podcast, Jim and Chris want you to know that they're available to help you plan for your retirement. Just visit their website at jimhelps.com. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. And click the Meet the Team button on the homepage. Now, here's Jim and Chris with today's show.
Welcome back to the Retirement and IRA Show EDU edition. On today's show, we're going to continue with the topic we started last week regarding potential changes to the tax code, we're talking income tax and estate taxes and gift taxes, so taxes all the way around. Started talking about that last week. We got a few other potential changes. These are potential because the law has not yet been passed, but we're paying attention to what's coming down the pipeline, if you will. And I think it's good for people who might be affected by these things to be paying attention, so it's not a complete shock when some of this stuff actually makes it into law. Before I turn it loose with Jim with the additional topics in this area we're going to talk about, I want to remind everybody that next week, on next week's EDU show, special guest episode with Dr. Wade Pfau is going to be on the show, unless something technically fails between now and then. I haven't heard the final confirmation, so I guess I should say that as a little disclaimer, but fully expect Dr. Pfau, if he's not on next week, we'll get him on another time. But all the indications are that we'll be good to go next week. So everybody tune back in for next week's show. I'm sure it'll be excellent, mostly because we have a guest on.
Right, and you're going to let him talk, right? You're not just going to keep like normally do, over-talking him and going on and on and on?
I'll try. Right. You might want to talk a little more than usual.
I'll talk more because
you're so
talk
quiet
less.
In the
right.
background.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. Okay. All righty, well, hopefully he can make it on. It'll be interesting. Mm-hmm. So today, folks, as Chris said, because we only have about 45 minutes for this EDU show, I'm not going to cover the rest of the changes. We're going to have to do another show. Remember when I started this, I said it could take 3, 4, 5 shows to go through this.
Whoa, that's too many.
Well, too bad.
We can't do 5 shows on one thing.
We did 4 on QLAX.
I know, that was too much.
you don't think I could do 5 on these major tax changes?
We can do it. We shouldn't do it.
But what I'm saying is, first of all, our listeners want it. At least I think they do. But we got Wade in the middle. So we're going to do
it up,
yeah,
I guess.
We're going to do another one today, and then Wade's going to come in. He's not going to talk taxes, although no. He may. But I would assume he's going to talk retirement planning. Mm-hmm. And then we'll get back into some more of these tax proposals, and we'll see.
Okay. So we'll do a few more today.
Yeah, we got a broken up.
As long as we have a break in the middle,
there'll be a break. Now the QLAX shows
that would have been better with a break.
Yeah, we did 4 QLAX shows. Chris couldn't believe yours truly could opine.
No, I can believe you can talk a lot. Fill show after show after show. It was never about belief. It was about enduring.
I still will never forget. I can't remember the restaurant you and I were at when we talked, when the radio station first interviewed. I'm sorry, folks. Oh, I know right, I talk right, about right, this right. a lot, but it just made me laugh. I think 12 years ago now, 10 years ago. When did we start?
13. I think 13? It was 08. So 08, 09, right in there.
So 11, 12, 13 years ago, Chris and I started on this little radio station in Greeley, KFKA, King of Farming, King of Agriculture, right?
KFKA. Yep.
The first radio station in Colorado that was started in the 1930s.
Yeah, it was the oldest radio station operating west of the Mississippi. And to his this day because it's still operating, yeah.
So it doesn't have very high listenership. But anyways, they came out. They were really excited to have Chris and I come on board and start doing. It was a half-hour show at the time.
Mm-hmm,
and I always remember the producer sitting down at lunch with us saying, so how long do you think the show will go on for? And I remember saying to him something like, excuse me? He says, well, you're going to run out of things to talk about, right? IRAs and retirement?
Yeah, right. He thought this was a, you know, 6-month gig or something.
I hope he's still not waiting.
But yeah, I remember that too.
Yeah,
that
anyways, he clearly underestimated me. I could literally do this 8 hours a day, 5 days a week, and still never run out of things to say. But anyways, I digress. Okay, we're going to get into a few of the items, folks. We're not going to get into grantor trusts yet. I promise we will. That will take up a whole show because I need to set the stage a little bit about what those trusts are, because even though you don't think they're going to apply to you, they probably will on a few things. Today, we're going to talk about a few of the other items that we feel will pass. Last week, we talked about, Chris, how they want to stop the ability to convert after-tax dollars in an IRA to a Roth IRA. I truly feel that provision will make it. I call this the anti-Peter Thiel. Is that how you pronounce his name?
Thiel? I think it's Thiel, but Thiel? Yeah.
Okay.
People know who you're talking about. Okay. The evil Roth guy.
Don't make me laugh.
Easy.
The guy who created, not created, but he had a $5 billion Roth IRA.
I think he still has it.
Well, he still probably has it, right? Why close it?
Yeah, I mean, exactly.
So he's got this massive Roth IRA, and the government doesn't like that. So they're really trying to control how much money can go into Roths. And I do, again, personally, I am on record. I will stay on record as saying I feel probably 8 to 12 years from now, there will be a concerted effort. Don't know if it'll pass, but a concerted effort to close Roths. No more. You can keep them. I think they'll grandfather them. But they're not going to let you put more money in. Because as you see, a lot of the provisions that they have in this bill are to stop money from getting in. They really seem to be limiting it, Chris, or they seem to be on the road to limiting it to just contributions.
Right.
Thiel got a lot of money in there through, I think, massive conversions and then the purchase of fractions of a cent of shares in PayPal. But trying to limit to just contributions. And they're doing it slowly, but to me, the writing is on the wall. So we're going to get into more of that. But we did talk last week about how we feel the backdoor Roth contribution and the mega Roth conversion are going to go the way of the dinosaur. And I think January 1st, you're not going to be able to do either of those strategies. So listen to last week's show for more on that. And if you have basis in your accounts, your IRAs and your 401ks, start finding ways to maybe separate that cream from the coffee. It's not going to work for everyone. But if you're eligible, you got a big decision to make. Should I go through the hoops and separate it or not? Capiche?
Capiche.
Okay. So a couple of
actually, is that the way you respond to capiche? Repeat it back.
Does it mean that okay?
I know, but I don't know how to respond to that. I just
well, if someone says,
repeated it back to you.
Well, right. If someone says okay, they say okay, 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 okay.
If that's what it means, I'm all on board. I don't know.
I have no idea. I don't even know what language that is. Isn't it
I think
Italian?
It's Italian. Yeah.
I thought it was Italian.
I think it's Italian, not Italian. Isn't Italian just the dressing?
No, it's you want to hear. Okay, now I got to.
Or is it the country of Italy?
I got to tell you this. I got to tell you this because only yours truly could get himself into this. So I was at an event because you're saying I say Italian.
Mm-hmm.
All right. I was at an event a couple weeks ago, and I was introducing myself to people, and there was this woman there, and she asked me what my name was. Mm-hmm. I said, "I'm Jim," and your name is? She says, "I'm Rita." I says, "Hi, Rita." She says, "No, I'm Rita." I says, "I know you're Rita. I'm Jim. You're Rita." She says, "No, I'm Rita." And then someone next to me says to her, "Hi, Rita." And she says, "No, I'm Rita." And he turns out She, I her, think, was from Ecuador.
And her name is Imrita?
Imrita is her name. It was like Abbott and Costello going on here.
How are you the one that gets caught up in those things?
I have no idea. I'll never forget her name now. Imrita. But, hi, Rita. No, I'm Rita. Yeah, I know. You're Rita. I'm Jim, I said. Hi, babe. But anyways, when you said Italian, I was thinking I'm Rita. But anyways, that was something that was going on. All right.
Thanks for
that. Let's get into this. So one of the other things that Chris and I said they might come after, and this doesn't come as a shock. This is probably about the lowest hanging fruit of all of the things, Chris. So, as you know, folks, the Republicans, when they passed their tax cuts under the Trump administration, most of the tax cuts expire in 10 years. So, on January 1st, 2026, we're going to revert back. Even the tax brackets and standard deduction and personal exemptions, remember that?
Yeah, all
personal
those
exemptions
coming back.
AMT, all those, a lot of people aren't subject to AMTs. All of these things are coming back January 1st of 2026. They only passed the tax cuts for 10 years. So what is going to most likely pass is the 11.8 million dollar current exemption will be cut to $5
million. For estate and gift tax.
For estate and gift tax purposes, yes. So right now, again, the two taxes are integrated, if you will. Years ago, they were separate, and it was even more confusing. But now it's integrated again. Whether you give assets during your life or give assets during your death, they are going to tax that gift to you, the giftor, not the giftee. The giftee doesn't pay the taxes. The giftor pays the taxes. Even in an estate, the estate pays the taxes, and then you get, as the beneficiary, whatever is left. The government always gets paid first. So what we thought they would do eventually is maybe cut it back to a number lower than $5 million, which is under the Tax Cuts and Job Act, where it's supposed to go back to where it was now 5 years ago, by time this takes effect January 1st. Would be back down to $5 million. They're going to cut it to $5 million, but there was a push to remove the inflation adjustment. My understanding is, in the proposed law, they're going to keep that, Chris. So the actual exemption amount will be closer to $6 million. I don't know what it'll exactly be, but they will adjust it for inflation.
So it's about in half from what it is now.
From what it is now. Substantially higher, folks, than what Bernie Sanders and his ilk
could
wanted.
Could be way worse.
Right.
They wanted back to the old million or 600,000.
Exactly. That's what he wanted. Yeah. He wanted it to $1 million. Him and his ilk in Congress wanted it to $1 million. So right now, they got it down to five, which adjusted for inflation over the past 5 years. We'll be closer to six. I don't know if it'd be exactly six. But as Chris pointed out, roughly about half of what it is today. The other thing, good news, that has remained has been the portability, the ability for spouses to share that exemption amount at the death of one of the spouses, as long as you follow certain rules, which we won't get into here. But you get certain rules to follow within 9 months of the death of your spouse. File the 706 or something like that is the estate tax return number. I forget. As long as you file the estate tax return and apply for portability, you can get your deceased spouse's exemption amount as well. Now, one thing with that, your deceased spouse's is locked in at the value on the day they died. It never will receive a COLA adjustment. Only yours will. So it is a record-keeping nightmare to keep track of a lot of this. So you do it yourself for tax people. You're just going to have to start doing that, keeping track of this. But anyways, I don't want to get too deep into portability. I just wanted to share that it did so far survive, and it did make it. And that's important because we had talked on a previous podcast, Pete. Well, we would have talked with Pete. Well, actually, we probably did talk with Pete about this at some point, but you're not Pete. You're Paul. Jeez. You got to help me when Wade is on. I'm going to be in deep doo-doo with him. Lord only knows when I'm going to call him.
I've never heard you miss.
He's never been
Wade
on the show before. Well, leave it to me to be calling him Frank by the end of the day.
I'll try not to set you up.
Don't make me look like a fool. I don't think he listens to our podcast, does he?
I can't.
I hope not, because he wouldn't have agreed to come on. Yeah,
that's
I'm
probably
sure.
True. Although right before we might get an email. Hey, I listened to a couple
I'm
shows.
Sick.
Yeah, I'm
not
sure.
Feeling good.
Not sure this is going to work out.
But anyways, where I was going, Chris. I don't even know where I was going. Where was I going with that?
Something about estate.
Oh, the estate. Yes, yes. Mm-hmm. Something that I want to mention. Mm-hmm. So we had mentioned off the cuff on a few previous shows about portability, and I explained briefly about AB Bypass Trust. Remember that?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. One listener wanted to point out that I didn't share a few things on the AB Bypass Trust. I did receive your email, listener, and I'll address it on another podcast. I don't think it's appropriate on this one. I want to do the tax discussions. But he did point out a few things that I didn't discuss, and he felt I should. And I agree. I should probably mention these things. But he did point out that I mentioned them on a previous podcast to which they listened to and saved a lot of money when I believe his mom passed away. I think it was his mom. I can't remember because of the podcast and what I had said when I think he said the CPA or the trust attorney didn't know part of what we shared and saved them some money. So I do. I will mention that. So we'll get back into that to that listener if he's listening, saying you still haven't addressed my email. I will. Okay. So that I don't think is any big surprise, Chris.
No,
the reduction. I think it's going to pass. If I had to again say, I do think the inability to convert after-tax basis to Roths will pass. I do think that bringing up the 39.6 sooner rather than later will pass as the top bracket. And that contraction, Chris, as you know, of that 35 bracket, pushing people a lot sooner into the 39.6.
Makes it super skinny,
yes,
for sure.
I think that will pass. I think what we just talked about will pass. And I do feel as I think this will pass too, and it's going to impact far more people than they think. And that is, and I alluded to it on our last show, the 3% surtax on ultra-high net worth income taxpayer, ultra-high income taxpayers. And this is a proposal, folks, to add a 3 percentage point, not 3%, but 3 percentage point. Why don't you explain what that means, Chris, to the 39.6?
Well, when you say something increases by 3%, that sounds like it's just a little bit. If you had 100 of something, it increased by 3%. It goes up, 103 or something. But depending on what the basis number is that you're starting with, when you increase something from 3 to 6, that's an increase of 3, right? But it's doubling it. So you have to be really careful with the wording. There's a very big difference between increasing something by 3 percentage points and increasing something by 3%. 3% seems innocuous, right? A little tiny, it's just a little 3%. But 3% on 39.6 is actually an increase of about 7.5%, a little over 7.5% increase in your effective tax rate. So that's probably the way you should think about it, more so as far as the scale goes.
Exactly. So the new bracket for those taxpayers would be 39.6 plus 3 or 42.6. Mm-hmm. And who are those taxpayers? It would be taxpayers who have $5 million or more of income. Well, that's going to narrow it right down, don't you think, Chris?
Seems weird that they're approaching it like this. I don't know why they just don't. Maybe it's just more technically difficult to add another bracket. Because doesn't this have the effect of adding another bracket on top that happens to be at 42.6 instead of 39.6? Maybe it's easier to add the surcharge legally in the law. I don't know what reason it is, but effectively it's another bracket.
So when you dig a little deeper into it, though, they're calling this a surtax, which is technically a surcharge, as you said. So from a technical perspective, folks, taxpayers, these high net worth taxpayers, will not be able to use below the line deductions to reduce their exposure to the tax because it's going to be a tax on MAGI, modified adjusted gross income. So they're not going to be able to use below the line deductions. Mm. So you got to keep that in mind. Now, granted, given the huge, I mean, not too many people have $5 million of income. Will you agree?
Right. Yeah.
So few taxpayers are ever, ever, ever going to pay this. But before we came on the radio show, I let the bag out, the cat out of the bag.
You pulled the bag out of the cat?
No. I let the cat out of the bag. I was going to say it correctly all the time. Okay. I let the cat out of the bag and told you, Chris, how this can probably impact a lot of people listening to this show and they don't know it. Would you agree? It could probably hit people.
Could, if you don't follow the general rule of not naming a trust as beneficiary of a retirement account.
Exactly.
You're opening yourself up to even more pain and suffering.
If you've been a longtime listener to this show, you know Chris and I are not huge fans of trusts being beneficiaries of IRAs. We understand they're done all the time, even before Secure Act, even before that law that took effect last January. Was it this January 1st or last January 1st?
Last January 1st.
Okay. Even before the law took effect last January 1st that made IRAs inherited by non-spouse beneficiaries. And an IRA that has a trust as beneficiary, even if the beneficiary of that trust is your spouse, is still considered a non-spousal beneficiary and must be closed within 10 years. So keep that in mind. But if you have a trust as beneficiary and your spouse is beneficiary of that trust or your children is beneficiary of that trust, it is a non-spousal beneficiary and the IRA must be closed. How fast, Chris?
Within 10 years.
Generally. Within 10 years. Chris is correct. All you listening to this, if you're a longtime listener, you know all this. Chris, when I say in the eyes of the IRS, your IRA is IRD, what does that mean? I know we go over this, but there's new listeners. What did I just say?
Essentially, that means that all that value, those dollars that you see sitting there in that retirement account, you see it as an asset just like any other dollars. The IRS sees it as income to be recognized at some point. It was income connected to a person that never was taxed. And it needs to be taxed at some point, and then there's rules on when it's taxed. Generally, when it comes out of the account, it's going to be taxed. Doesn't matter that you think of it as an asset. It's income. So it follows the income tax rules, not the general rules for taxation that apply to assets outside of retirement accounts.
Exactly. So all the money coming out of your IRA, and a lot of you people listening to this show have 70, 80, 90% of your money tied up into always taxable IRAs, 401ks, things like that. And you also, for some bizarre reason, want to name a trust as beneficiary of that account. Now, Chris and I do say we recognize there are times when you need trusts. We're not antitrust at all. We love trusts. We just don't necessarily love them as beneficiary of IRAs. If you use a trust as beneficiary of an IRA, folks, it should be for two reasons, protection or control. Now, you could use trusts to also reduce estate taxes. It's a whole other thing. And there is no trust that is going to help you reduce estate taxes on an IRA or a 401k or anything like that. They can be used to reduce estate taxes on different assets, but not always taxable IRA, 401k, 403b, 457 style accounts. Never will they reduce estate taxes. So here's the issue. Chris, generally speaking, you're going to have it for protection and control, meaning you feel your children or your spouse, for some reason, can't inherit a lot of wealth. Mm-hmm. You're worried that they might go through a divorce and lose some of the wealth, or they make bad money decisions, or they're in a career that exposes them to higher than normal chances of being sued personally. Or they could be a spendthrift, or sadly, they could have physical or mental disabilities that keep them from adequately managing their own assets. So you follow where I'm going, Chris, for protection and control?
Totally.
If you have those issues, you're going to create a trust, and the trust is going to be one of two kinds, conduit or a accumulative. We call them discretionary or non-discretionary. I like to call them a conduit trust or an accumulation trust, because in English, you understand what that means.
Right.
A conduit just sends things right through. You can see a conduit sometimes across a road. They're putting one in on a road that I commute in all the time to let water drain through. So they're digging up the road, and they're putting this big metal thing, and they'll put the road back on top of it. That's a conduit they're putting under the other side. I would call it a conduit. Mm-hmm. It's just going to allow things to pass through. Correct, Chris?
Yeah.
Okay. So if you have an IRA and you created a trust and the trust is beneficiary of the IRA and your children are the beneficiary of the trust, but it's a conduit trust, what happens, Chris, when money comes out of that IRA?
Flows right through the conduit and out. So the trust there, in that case, that money that flowed out of the IRA is not controlled or protected. It has to flow out right to the kids.
Right. So what's the point of creating it? Now, it made the attorney a lot of money who created it, but if you're doing it for protection and control, a conduit trust doesn't work. It kind of does work in the...
It works a little.
Yeah.
But it doesn't work the way
under
most
the
people
old
would
rules,
hope.
Right. Under the yeah. old rules, you wanted to lock in the stretch. You didn't want to restrict your children from having the IRA, but you wanted to make sure they stretched it over their remaining life expectancy. You created a conduit trust. Why? On the end of that conduit, it was a one-way valve. Money could only come out of the IRA. You couldn't, or your children couldn't, stick their hands back up into right. the IRA and pull money out. Soon as the money came out, there was a flap on the end of that little conduit, folks, and it would slam shut.
Right.
So your kids can't get their hands back in there. And it was a way of locking in the stretch. Well, that point is moot now because the IRA has to be closed within 10 years.
So you get a little bit, but you only get that protection during that 10-year period.
Not on old conduit trusts, which were written True. With the language that
right.
said required
yeah.
minimum distributions mm-hmm. will be passed through.
Mm-hmm.
There's no more required minimum well, there's one.
Yeah.
There's only one required minimum distribution when a non-spouse beneficiary inherits an IRA now. That's in December 31st of year 10 after death. So if you have these old conduit trusts and haven't died yet, if you already died, it's too late. But if you haven't died yet and you have an old conduit trust, you're going to want to get your estate planning attorney to change that language, because your kids aren't going to be able to get anything out until the 10th year when it all comes out.
Mm-hmm.
The point I'm trying to make, folks, with a conduit trust, you're not going to get protection and control. And if that's what you're trying to do, especially if you got 2, 3, 4, 5 million in these retirement accounts, and you may not like the spouses that your children married, or again, they're prone to lawsuits in their career, or whatever the reason may be, you want to protect and control it, you have to create a discretionary trust. What kind of happens with a discretionary trust, Chris?
Now, when funds flow out into the trust can actually hold them for a variety of reasons. Depends on the language of the trust, but it's no longer an automatic conduit where it flows through. The trustee has discretion over pushing it out or allowing it to flow out ultimately to the trust beneficiaries. So a completely different situation than the conduit mechanism that we described before.
Exactly. So you're thinking, okay, I spoke to my attorney and I don't want this $3, $4, $5 million IRA to just go to my children. I want to protect it. So I created this discretionary trust. The attorney was brilliant. He did all this for me. And they created this trust that's going to allow the money that has to come out of my IRA to go into this trust. And then the trustee will decide how much, if any, will go to my children based on these parameters. And I'm going to put the protection and control on those assets. So if it's not wise to pass that money on to my children, I can protect it. Sounds wonderful, but there's a problem. I told you, your IRA is IRD to the IRS. Every dollar that comes out of that IRA or 401k or 403b, 457, every dollar that comes out is considered income. You see assets, government sees income.
And it's going to go on somebody's income tax return.
Exactly. Get that through your head. You see assets, they see income. So that money goes into the trust. If the trustee, remember, they got 10 years to close the IRA. So let's say you left them a $3 million IRA. And $3 million is sitting in the IRA, the trustee can decide when that money comes out. They can let it sit there for 10 years and drain it all in year 10, or they can take a little bit out at a time. But what if, for one reason or another, that money can't go to your child? I'm hoping you opened it for protection and control, and God forbid you actually need the protection and control, that there was a true risk to your children, that you didn't want to just leave them the money. You needed the protection, you needed the control, and now the trustee is saying, whoa, wait a minute. I got to keep this protection and control. I can't pass it on. This doctor beneficiary is being sued, or this spouse is being beneficiary is being divorced by their other spouse, and it's a messy divorce, or whatever the case is. You need to keep it in, or the trustee needs to keep it in the trust. That's why you created it, protection and control. Now, whether the trustee took out $300,000 a year for 10 years or took out $3 million in year 10, it's sitting in the trust. It did not go to your children. So it's going to be on the trust tax return, folks. And this 3 percentage point surtax of 42.6% will be imposed on trusts that have more than $100,000 of income in any year. In any year. If your trustee waited to year 10 to close a $3 million IRA, what the hell is 42.6% of $3 million, Chris? Sounds like a heck of a lot of money.
42.6% of $3 million bucks. That's only $1.278 million. Not quite half.
This surtax hits trusts at $100,000 of income. Mm-hmm. Your IRA to the IRS is IRD. Stop looking at your retirement accounts. I tell you guys this all the time. Don't look at your retirement accounts as an asset. Look at what they are. That's why we call them deferred spending, because that's what it is in our eyes. Right. But the IRS looks at it as taxes.
And that's on top taxes. That's on top of the already highest marginal rate that you're paying in a trust on the tax return when the income is over $13,000. That bracket that no one ever imagines themselves being into, because it's way just those ultra wealthy people. Here, the trust, when it's receiving it and reporting it as income, they get hammered with the, at this point, 37%, which we now know is probably going to the 39.6. But then, you know, reward once you hit to 100,000, which is still not that much when you're draining a whole IRA within a 10-year period, then you get the extra 3% percentage point surcharge or surtax on it. You just went from bad to worse.
Exactly. And when that money sits inside the IRA, any interest, dividends, and here's the kicker.
He meant inside the trust.
Yes. Oh, I'm sorry. Did I say IRA?
Yeah.
When that money is distributed, and let's just say the worst case scenario, the trustee thought he'd be smart and let the IRA sit there, Chris. So it starts at $3 million, and he says to the beneficiary, look, I'm going to leave it in the IRA until I have to take it out, and maybe in 10 years I can pass it right on to you. I'm giving an extreme example, folks. But whether the trustee drains that $3 million IRA over 10 years or drains it all in year 10, sooner or later that money is going to sit inside the trust. And if he can't, or she, if the trustee is a female, can't pass that money on to the beneficiary, for whatever reason you wanted the protection and control, the trustee had to enact that. So yes, that first year tax return, well over $1 million-something gone of your inheritance. But then that asset in the trust is going to start earning its own income, is it not, Chris? Mm-hmm.
Depends on how you have it positioned. The trustee has some discretion then, because, you know.
True.
So it depends on that. But yes, it very well is. You're going to have maybe 1.7 plus million left after the giant tax income tax bite out of it. But now that's just sitting in there and likely generating dividends, interest, cap
and
gains.
Cap gains. Mm-hmm. Cap gains in here count towards that $100,000.
So you might have an ongoing penalty as well.
Exactly. Yeah. That a lot of money is lost. I hated trusts as beneficiaries of IRAs. I hated him before the Secure Act. I hate him more after the Secure Act. And I'm going to hate him even more after this act becomes law. I think this has a very good chance of passing. How could politicians not pass a law that taxes people with $5 million more of income? They would be hung in effigy.
Burned in effigy.
They would be, you know, they're hung in effigy.
I don't think so.
Yes, you're hung in... Folks, help me out here, because I know I'm right on this one. You're hung in effigy. You're not burned in effigy. You're hung in effigy. They create a little dummy that looks like you, and they hang it up. Anyways, neither here nor there.
Oh, can be either one.
Ha! So...
Either one's right, I said. You can't ha me.
I didn't hear. I'm sorry.
I'm sorry that...
Thank you. You stop right there. You don't have to go on. We're wasting time. So I can't see, folks, how a politician won't let this pass, and that's why I was warning you. You may think this isn't going to hit you, but I know a lot of you people listening, you've got most of your wealth tied up in always taxable accounts, and some of you create trusts, and sometimes you need to. Sometimes you're going to be sitting there, oh my God, I'm going to lose half of what I created for my children because it's all in an always taxable IRA and I want to leave it to them, especially if you have special needs children. Oh my goodness, this is going to be brutal.
The good news is before you pass away, there's some things you could do to mitigate this. That's another show that we'll talk about that, but this isn't something that's unavoidable. It is maybe not an easily unavoidable, but there's things that can be done ahead of time. If you wait until after you pass away, too late to fix it for the most part. But if you are worried this is going to happen, there's different paths you might consider taking that could mitigate some of this.
Exactly. And life insurance is one of the main ones. We've talked about that many times. Mm-hmm. One path, conversions. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Another path.
Roth conversions. So anyways, folks, there's things you can do. But keep this in mind, especially you do-it-yourselfers. If you have parents who might have $1, $2, $3, $4 million in retirement accounts and you know that they've included trusts, you best start looking through, especially if they were written a long time ago. Mm-hmm. You got to start looking through them, folks. Is it a conduit? Is it a discretionary? Who's the trustee of the trust? Are they even going to know how to do this kind of stuff? Do you even know that within 9 months of... wait a minute, not 9 months. It's... oh, God, I'm hitting myself with something here. When do they have to get the... By September...
September.
No, September 30th is the designation date. Isn't it October 31st of the year following the year the IRA owner dies? They have to get the trust document to the custodian.
Yes, that's one of the four or five things that has to happen.
I think it's October 31st. There's this little other known rule of trust, right, folks, now that I'm going on this little tangent here. Most trusts blow up and never, never even get eligible to be used as beneficiary of an IRA. Chris, look up what...
Yeah, I'm looking it up.
I don't... Designation date is September 30th. This, I think, is October 31st of the year following the IRA owner's death. They have to get the trust document to the custodian. There's a rule that if a trust is beneficiary of a retirement account, the trustee must get a copy of the trust to the custodian, I believe, by October 31st of the year following the year the IRA owner died. Most trusts never do that, or not most, but a lot. Most of the ones that get ruled ineligible to be beneficiary of an IRA, that's the number one reason why they blow up.
Yeah, it's by October 31st of the year following, sometimes referred to as the Halloween rule. Here's how you can remember it from this point forward. If it's not done, the trust is not qualified for look-through. So that whole point of a look-through that'll get you the 10 years, because then you lose and it's back to the five-year.
Yep.
Right? So that's the big issue, is this whole thing we're complaining about how horrible a 10-year payout requirement is or distribution is. Five's way worse. So, there's that rule that that gets failed all the time because a trustee doesn't realize that they have to do that.
Well, a lot of people name the trustee one of their children. And they don't know. Right. They might be a mechanic, as someone wanted us to keep pointing out, not just saying a doctor or an attorney.
Even doctors or attorneys.
They can be anything. You can be a cop like I used to be, a nurse like my sister currently is. It doesn't matter who you are, but a lot of people name their child as trustee, which is a crazy thing to do. They don't know all these rules. And they missed that deadline and the trust blows up. Anyways, I kind of went down a little tangent there. But you got to watch this if you have a trust as beneficiary or if your parents have trusts as beneficiary of their accounts. Encourage them. Stop paying attention to this. Or they could easily lose 30, 40, 50% of their assets in these outrageous trust tax rules that nobody knows and nobody ever talks about.
Yep.
Okay, so before we wrap up, one other thing. Do we have enough time for me to keep going?
We can wrap one short thing.
Okay. This one is a prohibition on Roth conversions. Now, don't panic yet. This is just, I think, the first salvo. They're floating that lead balloon to see how this thing goes over.
Yeah, I think this one, I think, is going to see a lot of variations and argument.
Yeah, for pro and con. Mm-hmm. I still feel this is the writing on the wall. The canary in the coal mine. See, I got that one. Mm-hmm. The canary, mm-hmm. not a canary, whatever that is, a canary in a coal mine of what I think is going to happen in 8 to 12 years. No more Roths. I really do feel that's going to happen. But don't worry, if you have one, they're going to let you keep it. So let's give a little info backed on that. If you are a single taxpayer and earn more than $400,000 or a joint filer who earn more than $450,000, you will no longer be able to convert. Now, there is a new tax measure. There's a couple of little twists and turns here. First, they created a new tax measure called the ATI. The adjusted taxable income.
Just what we needed.
Just another one to go with Maggie and... Yeah, and
all the different Maggies. Now we got ATI in there.
ATI. So what is ATI, folks? It's taxable income. So it's your taxable income, not your gross income, your taxable income, plus any deduction for contributions you made to an IRA. Well, there's not going to be any deductions when you have income that high. But anyways, minus any required minimum distributions. So that's how you're going to come up with your ATI. And if your ATI is greater than $400,000 or $450,000 if you are married, filing jointly, you will not be able to convert. If it's below that, you can convert.
See, I think this is crazy from a policy standpoint. In my mind, if nothing else, if they're wanting to raise tax revenue and punish people who are trying to, quote, avoid taxes, force them to convert. I mean, it just seems weird that, I guess you could argue that, oh, but then there's going to be all this potential growth. Yeah, but is the United States really wanting to partner with you as a, they kind of are now. They're partnering with you in your IRA, for instance. They're beneficiaries of any growth in there when it's in a traditional retirement account because the taxes they get are bigger when the account grows to be bigger. Nobody ever talks about it like that because the government really isn't in the business of being a co-investor with you, but that's effectively the system that they have created. Here, if they're wanting to generate tax revenue, target these people in the high tax brackets and make them convert. I mean, this seems backwards to
me.
But
that's what they did. Because this part of the bill, if it becomes a law in the future, doesn't take effect for 10 more years.
Yeah, so, but I think that's a gamble.
Well, what they're doing here is twofold, Chris. They have to somehow come up with $3.5 trillion to be able to pass this monstrosity.
So they're scaring people, getting them
into converting.
Yeah,
so they're trying to force people into converting. Why? As the CBO scores this bill so the politicians can pat themselves on the back and say, look, this is going to be revenue neutral. We got it all worked out. Look at these numbers. The CBO is going to assume this outrageous amount of people are going to start converting over the next 10 years. These bills are all priced on a 10-year time segment, folks. You all know that. It's not a $3.5 trillion bill once and done. It's not a set it and forget it. That's all it's ever going to cost the U.S. government. They're estimating what it's going to cost them over 10 years. And what's funny, Chris, don't get me going on this, but if you actually look at all the estimates the CBO ever made on any type of bill that expanded social programs like this one, they were always woefully,
way wrong.
Yeah. By hundreds of billions, if not trillions of dollars.
And when I've looked into this in the past, we don't want to get on this too much of a tangent, but they have restrictions on what assumptions they can make. And I think that's what ends up blowing up the predictions is, we'll leave that for another show. I'd want to look it up again anyway, but when I've looked at that in the past, I'm pretty sure that was a big culprit.
Right. They had, I remember the Journal did a whole series on this several years ago, Wall Street Journal, if you don't know what I mean when I say Journal, folks, many years ago, I think 3, 4, 5 years ago now, on all the big social programs, Medicare, Medicaid, food stamps, all of that, what they estimated and what it actually cost. It was outrageous. So don't even believe the $3.5 trillion, folks. So that's why they need as much tax money as they can get. So what they're doing by enacting it in 10 years, they're going to force people or scare people, as Chris put it, to start converting now so the CBO can turn around and say, well, we estimate we're going to take in all this additional revenue, not just from tax increases, but from conversions. So that's why they're doing it. But it takes effect in 10 years, folks. Couple of things. There's no language that I've seen right now that anyone who has actually read the bill, and I read their summaries, indicate, Chris, the 400 or 450 is adjusted for inflation. So what is 400 or 450 in 10 years? Not that, a lot less than 400 or 450 today. But also, there is nothing in this bill, Chris, that number one states that money you convert will not be included. It says taxable income. There's no subtraction out for conversion money. And the only RMDs that can be subtracted out, I misspoke before, are not the RMDs you are forced to take under current RMD rules. It's any RMDs you must take if you have an IRA greater in size than the government feels you should have. And that's right now $5 million, no, it's either 5 or 10, I forget. We're going to talk about this in 2 weeks. But there's a certain amount that if you have more than that, they're going to force you to take money out. It's only those RMDs that are excluded from this, Chris, not the quote-unquote normal RMDs. Mm-hmm. So here's the thing. In 10 years, $400,000 for a single, $450,000 for a married isn't going to be that big at all if they don't increase it for inflation.
Right.
But even then, there is nothing in the subtraction of ATI, Chris, for what? Converted amounts. Your actual conversions, right now, the way the law is written, will be included in that calculation. So it's possible at the end of the year, it's also a cliff. I want to put, I know my mid, I'm talking fast here. It's a cliff, $1 over. You're not going to be able to convert. There is nothing in the law, Chris, that says you subtract out conversions. So now you're going to have money inside a Roth that should never have been converted. Right. What can you no longer do with converted money in a Roth, Chris?
You can't recharacterize it. So you could convert your way into breaking this rule, which means you shouldn't have been able to convert, but you can't undo it.
There's nothing in this law that brings back the ability to do Roth recharacterizations. So there's no more saying, oh my God, I'm over by $1. I can't do this $300,000 conversion I just did. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm going to move it back. Well, no, you can't. You can't do recharacterizations anymore. So the only option you have, Chris, is a removal of what? Excess contribution. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
So now $300,000 that you wanted to have in a Roth, tax issues are going to be the same because the taxes mm-hmm. would be over whether it was in the Roth or
it's
not.
It's just out, so you have no potential growth.
But now it's no more in the Roth. They accomplished what they wanted to accomplish. I'm telling you, folks, they're trying to slow money going into Roths, and someday they're going to say no more. Read the writing on the wall. You know how I often joke, Chris, on the show, don't listen to what I say, listen to what I mean, because I sometimes muff things up. Same thing here. Don't look at what they're doing. Look at where they're going. And this right here, to have this rule and to have no provisions in it, nothing in ATI right now in the bill indicates conversions aren't counted. How easy, Chris, is it going to be to muff it up by $1?
Yeah. It's going to be easy because a lot of times you don't know your full income by the end of the year. If you do an early year conversion, you could be setting yourself up for big failure.
So even if you only make $100,000 as a married couple or $150,000, $200,000 in retirement, and you're thinking, my God, I've got this big $2 million, $3, $4 million IRA I want to start converting, and you hire our firm or any competent firm, and we're doing a Roth calculation, and we start saying, look, you got a tax planning window of 8 years before your RMDs begin, so we're going to do massive conversions, and we're going to start converting $200,000, $300,000, $400,000. You can clearly see you can push up to these limits real easy, and you go $1 over. You can't do the conversion, but you already did it because you have to do it first in order to know if you could. It's like Nancy Pelosi when she said we got to pass the bill to find out what's in the bill. You got to do the conversion now to find out if you were eligible to do the conversion. And if you weren't eligible to do it, there's no provision to recharacterize it. So you got to take it as a withdrawal. And now money you were trying to get into a Roth is not in a Roth.
Well, hopefully some of these issues will get ironed out before the final version.
Yes, I'm just reading the bill as it's being rushed through Congress the way it is. If this stays as written, though, it's going to get messy. And who knows in 10 years?
True.
I mean, in 10 years, we most likely would be $50 trillion in debt. We're at 28 now. Come on, in 10 years, I think $50 million is an understatement. Who knows where they're going to be and what they're going to be taxing and what these rules are going to be? True. I don't think they're going to be lower than they are now, folks. See the writing on the wall. Start doing tax planning. That's where I want to end it today.
Perfect. So, again, next week we'll interrupt this discussion of the tax bill potentials. Have a little discussion with Wade Fow instead. So, actually, I'll put the call out. If anybody has any specific questions that you'd like us to pose to Wade, I don't know that we'll get to a Q&A where we would include those, but we're going to have a discussion with him. We'll see where it goes. But if there's something interesting that you'd like me to ask, shoot it on over. Just go to our website, jimhelps.com. There you can suggest a question for Wade on our show next week, or you can either suggest
what I would say,
topics.
Chris, if they send us an email to Jim at Jim Helps or Chris at Jim Helps, put in the subject line, question for Wade.
That's a good idea.
So we'll know, because if not, it sometimes just goes into our general question queue, which is kind of big. So put question for Wade. That's really good, because Chris and I have really no idea what we're going
to
interview Wade
on. I think
on.
There'll be plenty to
I'm
talk
sure we'll
about,
find
but...
things. Yeah, he's almost as smart as we are.
Yeah,
so we'll find things.
If things go
about.
Silent, it'd be nice for me to pull out a question. Hey, we have a question from one of our listeners. So, but
now, this isn't Stump Wade, so let's...
That might be fun, though.
Oh, Stump Wade?
Yeah, well, maybe the last... Well, probably will be the last time he's on the show, but might be fun one time.
I would see. I mean, think if we asked
him. He's pretty sharp. I don't know if you're going to stump
him. Well,
Wade.
He is, but do you think if we asked him what is the airspeed velocity of an English sparrow carrying a 10-pound coconut, he would know what we're talking about?
He might. He seems like a Monty Python nerd.
Okay, because I asked Siri that the other day, and she knew what the hell I was talking about. She pulled up Monty Python. So, Perfect. Good for Siri. If Siri knows it, Wade should know it.
I would think so.
All righty, folks.
So, thanks, everybody, for listening to the show once again this week, and we'll be back with everyone, next week on a brand new show.
You have listened to Jim on the radio, read his quotes in the media, and enjoyed his banter on iTunes. But even now, you may wonder what sets Jim Salmier and Associates apart from other financial planning companies. The answer is quite simple. Jim's diverse team of professionals specializes in retirement planning. They form a lifelong relationship with you and measure their success not through product sales, but through the security and prosperity you may achieve in your retirement. Jim's entire team shares his unwavering commitment to placing their clients' best interests first while offering their services at fair prices with full disclosures. The professionals at Jim Salmier & Associates are available to assist you with your retirement planning needs. Visit jimhelps.com to schedule your complimentary coffee and a second opinion meeting. That's Jim, HELPS.com. Or call 970-530-0556.
The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Solnier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor.